All right. Welcome, everybody. This is Susan Hyatt, and I'm here with the awesome Octobers, and this is Section 3. Tonight, we're talking about the power of story, and it is actually one – it is the – my most favorite class that they allow me to teach you guys, and the reason why is because – you guys will notice as we move into discussing marketing that business will bring up all of your issues. I don't care what they are. And many people who have never been in business for themselves are a little bit nervous about talking about marketing and putting yourselves out there. Because if you think about it, it's really a huge effort in risking your ego to say that you're starting a new thing, you know, you're reinventing yourself, to talk about coaching when lots of people either have a preconceived notion of what that is or they've never even heard of it. And so it's an interesting sort of first hurdle to get over in learning how to talk about coaching. Say that you're saying that you've reinvented yourself. Talk about coaching in a way that makes sense to people, and then just all the stuff that goes along with putting yourself out there can bring up our stuff. And so the big reason why I love the power of story is that over the past 9 years in business, I've really come to discover that learning how to share your unique stories is the secret sauce to attracting clients and putting together a business that you love. So, I mean, I talk about this, and you may have heard me say it on other recordings or other classes of mine that you've been in, but you can hire the most gifted graphic designer in the world, and you can hire a copywriter, and you can hire a marketing specialist to take over your social media and do all these things. But what's really required for a coaching business to succeed is for you to own who you are and your role as a coach and to share with other people your personal stories. There's really no way to get around it. There really isn't. Because you may have noticed if you've visited lots of websites of people who are in the self-help industry, there are websites that are very homegrown, but you love them. You love everything the person has to say. And there may be other websites that had every bell and whistle and video and glossy and looked amazing, but for whatever reason, it just didn't land with you. And my theory is usually if you can't put your finger on why you don't like a website or you don't like the energy coming off of a website, it's because that person's not really there. They've really outsourced everything to the point that their own story and their own energy is no longer in the room. And so in an effort to help you avoid that, one of the most important classes you're going to hear about as it relates to marketing is the power of story. And, of course, who better as an example of the power of story than our own Martha Beck? I mean, honest to goodness, she is probably one of the most gifted storytellers I have ever encountered in my lifetime. And Martha likes to joke in a lot of classes with coaches in training. She loves to say, when the topic of marketing comes up, she loves to joke and say, "Oh, I've never had to have a marketing plan a day in my life. Poo on marketing. It's all energy," which is true. It is all energy. That's all marketing is the exchange of energy. However, Martha, of course, now has a team in place to do her marketing for her. But before that, Martha really didn't have to have a marketing plan because she was always telling her stories. And that attracted clients and agents and Oprah to her like bees to honey. There is nothing more attractive than someone who knows who they are and who is sharing authentic story with the mindset or the intention of helping others, right? There's lots of people who like to yammer on about their own personal story, but not with the intention necessarily of ending suffering or healing the world. So Martha has so many amazing stories that she shared, big and small. You know, she has her column in O Magazine where she's constantly sharing everyday stories and client stories, and her books, of course. My gosh, we've got everything from Finding Your Own North Star, Martha, to the brand new book, Diana Herself, which is, of course, amazing. And when we talk about Martha, using her as an example, or we could use Byron Katie, we could probably use any major thought leader that you look up to and that you follow, I guarantee the people who stand out to you because they have shared their personal story before, and you could you can tell other people what it is. So I don't know about you guys, but I occasionally will meet someone who has never, ever, ever heard of Martha Beck. It still shocks me that that happens, but there are people in the world who've never heard of her. And I usually, if they don't know who Martha is, will tell a story about Martha. And I bet you guys do the same thing. If someone was like, you're in Martha Beck training, who's Martha Beck? I bet you tell them a story. And I'm curious to know which Martha story you tell. So think about it for a second. And if someone has never heard of Martha Beck, other than saying, oh, she's been on Oprah, she writes for O Magazine, she's Oprah's life coach, other than saying that, what do you say about Martha? Does anybody want to share?
Yeah, I tell the story of her, mainstream success, if you will, if you want to call, you know, Harvard degrees mainstream success, but kind of walking that traditional intellectual path and her walking away from that and bucking all other cultural norms, too.
Yeah, awesome. So that actually is part of the story I tell, too. Who's talking, by the way?
This is Ray.
Oh, hi, Ray. Thanks for volunteering. Okay, so like Ray, I typically talk about the Harvard Martha. I'll say, you know, three degrees from Harvard and, you know, was completely immersed in academia. And there's a couple of different directions that I take with that. So I might tell the Finding Your Own North Star Martha story, or I might also tell, can anybody else finish my thought? Like, what other story might you tell if you're telling the Harvard Martha story?
Oh, well, I was going to say about Adam and how everything changed.
Yes. Who is that joined me?
Hi, Susan. That's Amy.
Hi, Amy. Yeah, the expecting Adam story. Yeah, really powerful, right? I love that story, how Martha was just completely committed to academia and striving, and then her pregnancy with Adam and the magic that started to happen as a result of that took her down a completely different path, right? So, yep, there's the expecting Adam story, also very powerful. There's another couple stories, but there's another really big one that some people tell when they talk about Martha, depending on their clients.
How she left the Mormon church?
Yes, the leaving the saints Martha Beck. So juicy,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, really good one. I love that story too, right? I mean, especially if I have a client or I'm talking with someone who is struggling with religion and feels like they want to leave their faith but feels very scared to do it. I mean, that Martha story is an amazing story to share. Like, hey, her dad was the Elvis of the Mormon faith. What? And her whole story of abuse and leaving the saints and death threats, I mean, it's movie-worthy, right? It's an amazing Helen Back story. Anybody else have another Martha story they tell? If someone's like, who's that? Martha Beck.
usually the being married with three kids and then leaving the marriage is one that catches people's attention, too.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the story of both she and her husband coming out of the closet and leaving the marriage, amazing, amazing story of finding love, living your true life. Totally. I mean, she's right. She's got a book for every single one. Amazing stories. Now, you may find yourself thinking, oh, gosh, but my stories aren't that interesting. My stories pale in comparison to, you know, all of these major stories that Martha has. And part of what I would like to impress upon you in this class is that all of your stories are so valuable because they're yours. And you are an original. You are unique. And your clients are definitely meant to learn this stuff from you. Something that Martha taught me very early on was that, because I think it's very natural for coaches in training to think, you know, gosh, Martha, you've done it all, you've written it all, I should just be able to hand people your books, and why would they need me? And the truth of the matter is, yes, hand them Martha's books, and they're going to want a coach to walk them through things. And the other reality is that your clients that are meant for you are meant to learn about finding their right life, learning their own truth through the way that you do it. And the thing that's going to help them heal more quickly is you sharing story. Now, what's cool about the power of story is we've broken things down into different story categories. So what I would love to invite you guys to do is while I'm walking through the material tonight, I would love for you to take notes, because while right now you may think that you just – maybe you think you have one major story and you're not even sure you want to tell it. That's fine. I think some other stories will pop into your mind as we're going through these categories. It always does. And then also I'm going to talk some about, once you uncover the stories that you might want to use, what you can actually do with these stories to help start sharing them. So some really practical ways to apply your stories. And then also I'll give you a couple of quick tips on how everyday stories have really built my business and what I do to capture those stories when they come to me so that I don't lose them. Because I started out 9 years ago, almost to the day, my practice, and I was lucky if I was sending out one newsletter a month. Like in the beginning, when I was learning how to do everything for my business, I totally get where you guys are. It was a bit of a challenge for me to come up with things to write about. But the more I did it, the easier it became. To the point that now I probably have three different stories going out to my tribe a week, formally, meaning through a podcast and through a blog that goes out on Sundays and a blog on Wednesdays. So Monday, Wednesday, Sundays are my formal way, you know, days that I share stories. But I also do it every single day on Facebook. And whether you like social media or not, it can be a way for you to start telling your story in a very non-formal way. So all that to say, your clients definitely are going to resonate through hearing your stories. It helps to connect you with them. It also helps to build trust. Because quite plainly, people want to do business with people that they feel that they like, know, and trust. That's a really oldie but goodie. And so for people, in order for people to feel like they trust you, they need to know a little something about you. And so using personal story can help establish that. It also can help you, I will help you guys with the values and action survey that you did and the results from that. I'll talk a little bit about how important demonstrating those values in action can be to attracting your ideal clients. But, you know, sharing your stories motivates them. It inspires them. It shows them what's possible. And then there are also some ways which maybe you're not ready to share some of your biggest stories, there are ways, and I'll share some of my own, that I've used other people's stories to demonstrate my values in action. And it's a lot easier than you think. So anyway, does that sound like a good plan for tonight?
Yeah, Susan, I was wondering if I could ask a quick question, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure.
So as you're talking, my mind is going to one of Brené Brown's TED Talks about the power of vulnerability and sharing your story. And maybe it's just because of the background that I come from, but I'm always really careful about who I choose to share, especially stories that are really, that make you feel really vulnerable. And I remember Brené Brown saying, you know, for those stories that are really kind of tender, you have to be careful about who you share your story with. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you filter out, or is there any process you go through as far as determining, like, this one might be a little too tender right now to tell, maybe in a year or two, or do you just, like, do you just feel like you lay it out there all the time and you just hope for the best, or, like, can you speak a little bit to that?
No, I'm kidding. No, this is a great question because I love that Brené Brown quote, and I actually share that with clients all the time, that you share your stories with people who've earned the right to hear it.
And yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it's a little bit different when you're putting yourself in the position of a life coach who's sharing stories in an effort to help heal people. So obviously, you're not going to want to share a story that you're not healed over, because it's very difficult to share a story and help heal others if you're still processing that wound and aren't able to share it. And I'll share a personal example of mine, is that one of my hell and back stories is that I am a rape survivor. And I really didn't start talking publicly about it until about 3 years ago. I did mention it in my book, which was published before that, but very briefly. And I, for whatever reason, I had gone through therapy about it. I felt healed over it. But when the idea, let me back up and say, with one-on-one clients, I would absolutely talk about it, because sexual trauma comes up a lot with my clients.
Right.
So I would talk about it and share it one-on-one. But for whatever reason, I just didn't feel quite healed enough to really put it out there. And it wasn't a secret, and yet I wasn't leading with it, or it wasn't a big story that I shared a lot. And I had a woman who coordinates an event in Seattle called what is that event called? Urban Campfire. And Urban Campfire is actually a really cool annual event that is based on, like, hey, we're all gathered around a campfire, an imaginary campfire here, and we're all going to share our stories. And so she's looking for speakers. She asked me if I would speak. I said yes. She said, is there a story that you've never told from the stage? And I was like, oh, boy, here we go. I'm going to have to do this. And I decided it was time. One of the reasons that I was holding back on the story was vulnerability, in the sense that I knew that I would probably cry when I told the story. I was like, I don't know if I feel like falling apart in front of 1,000 people. However, that's exactly what I did. I did cry in front of the crowd, and it was amazing. And it was, and it did help a lot of people, and it did help me open myself up in ways that I hadn't been able to before. But my litmus test is, if you really have to ask the question, wait. You know, wait until you feel like the story needs to be told. So the good thing about tonight's class is that there are so many different kinds of stories that you can start sharing personal story and feeling the power of story without compromising yourself in a way that you're not ready. You know, there's it's not even necessary to share your hell and back if you don't want to. And there's no judgment whatsoever. You know, maybe you are completely healed about a hell and back story and you just don't feel like it. That is absolutely your prerogative. There is certainly no pressure here to share any stories. You may be sick of hearing yourself talk about a certain story. It's like, I don't want to tell it. That's fine.
Right.
So does that help?
Yeah, no, it did. And thank you for sharing that personal story from your life. No, it definitely does.
Cool. Awesome. That comes up. That's actually a really common question, as well as I kind of covered the other, which is, I know what my hell and back story is. I don't want to tell it, or I'm scared to tell it, or there's other people involved in the story. Can I still tell it? Which we'll get to as well. But okay. So the cool thing about stories is that coaching is really all story. It's interesting how whatever we're telling ourselves in our minds is a story. That's what coaching is helping someone identify the story they're telling themselves, and if it's not serving them, to help them create a new story. Stories are completely relatable. And the other thing that I really want to impress upon you is that your clients, they are probably online and they're probably surfing the internet, the World Wide Web, the Google, for answers to a problem. And so people connect really quickly to powerful human stories. Like, even look at Humans of New York. Do you guys know what that is when I say, have you, you know, on social media, have you seen Humans of New York? Or maybe you have the book, Humans of New York.
Yeah, okay. I've seen it on Facebook. It's incredible.
Yeah.
If any of you haven't, when we get off the phone, go Google Humans of New York. I actually have the book. And it's amazing. It's a photographer who goes around and takes pictures in New York City of people he encounters on the street. And he asks them questions about their lives. And they are snapshots, right? There's usually a beautiful lifestyle-type photo of the person he stopped and a snippet of their story, their personal story. And so, to me, that's like the epitome of what we're talking about here, that it doesn't have to be, or although it could be, a speech like I gave at Urban Campfire. It could be a status update. It's just a glimpse that helps connect you to your people. And so when I first taught this class, I had different labels for these stories than what's on your agenda. So I'm going to walk through it. Jessica Stewart was so smart, and she went through a great book called The Story Factor, which I do recommend. And she took the category titles from The Story Factor for these different kinds of stories, but I'll tell you what I call them, and you can call them whatever you want. But it's just important to know that there are different kinds of stories, and everyone tends to gravitate towards what their hell and back story is, but there really are plenty of other kinds of stories you can tell, and you'll see what I mean. So the first category is called the Who I Am and Why I Am Here stories. This is where hell and back would come under this heading. And it basically is a story that helps people understand who the heck are you and what have you been through. And so Martha, obviously, in the books that we've talked about already in this class, she's had several different hell and back stories. She has come out of the closet. She has a child with Down syndrome. She left the Mormon faith. She recovered from sexual abuse. She also, we didn't talk about the Martha Beck, who had several debilitating diagnoses, including fibromyalgia. So there's the Martha who overcame chronic pain, and on and on and on, right? She has a ton of different ones. Mine, I have a couple of different Helen Back stories. The one that I tell is about being a rape survivor. The other that I tell more often is the story of being a burnt-out workaholic real estate agent wearing golden handcuffs who reinvented herself. That story resonates with a lot of people because there are a lot of people in jobs that they don't like, and they're scared to death to do something else, right? But there's all kinds of Helen Back stories. And again, you may be like me, where you have a story that's compelling, but that you just don't want to tell, and that's okay. But if you do have a Helen Back story, or a couple, or a dozen, go ahead and jot some of those down, because you will probably revisit these notes more than once, and when you do, you may, when you come back to it, decide, like, okay, I'll tell that story now. But another category beyond Helen Back is what we're calling here vision stories. So these are the stories that illustrate a vision of the future, a promise of tomorrow, something that gives our struggle meaning. Like Martin Luther King, I have a dream. That's like the epitome of a vision story. These are also stories of inspiration. And so when I talk about this story or this kind of story, what's interesting about my stories of inspiration, I have a bunch of different ones, but the leading story of inspiration that I use is not about me. And I think for some of you who may struggle, like, do I have to talk about myself? Yes, we ultimately want you to, because your stories are important. But my favorite story of inspiration to tell is about my brother-in-law, Sean, when he was about 38 years old, my sister-in-law, who's a nurse, said that they went to bed one evening and he was snoring very loudly, but he wasn't ever a person who snored. And so she thought that was really weird, so she started elbowing him to wake him up, like I do to my husband, who is a regular snorer, like, hey, knock it off. And he didn't respond to her at all. And she like, kicked him under the blankets, did not respond. He just kept snoring. And so she turned on the lights. She started to shake him. He didn't respond to any of it. And so she started, quite honestly, freaking out because he just would, no matter what she did, he wouldn't snap out of it. So she called 911, and the EMTs arrived, and they couldn't rouse him either until they intubated him, which is where they put the breathing tube down his throat. And when they got him to the hospital, they live in a really very, very small town in Indiana, the doctor there on call gave her some bad and incorrect advice, if you will, and she called me and said that he had said to her that Sean had suffered a stroke in both hemispheres of the brain, and that basically whenever they were to stabilize him, that he would have about 100 days to get back online, 100 days to regain whatever he was going to regain with his speech, with his physical abilities. And they life-flighted him from the small hospital to a major hospital where, thank goodness, the experts there were like, no. I mean, stroke survivors, I mean, they have things that come back online years later. But I remember what that doctor said to her, and then when she relayed it to me, how it impacted all of us. First of all, I said to her, like, metaphorical, shoot the bird to that doctor. He has no idea what he's talking about. But secondly, my God, like, Sean was the fittest person in the family, healthy, exercised, three small kids, lots of life. And I thought, if Sean, when he enters rehab, has 100 days, then so do all of us. We're all either living or dying. And so I wrote a blog called The 100-Day Invitation. And it was really telling this very raw story about what was going on, but also that I was challenging my readers or anyone who stumbled across this blog to pledge something that they were going to do for 100 days. And so for me, I was saying things like, you know, every yoga class, every run, every meal I make will be in service to his rehabilitation. Won't you join me? And it was amazing. That, to date, remains my most widely shared blog, I think. I haven't checked in a while. But people really responded to this story of inspiration that, hey, there's this young father fighting to regain his speech and his physical movement, and we are all either living or dying. So for 100 days, I'm going to do this. And, I mean, there was even a radio show in Australia who picked it up. It was a pretty interesting 100 days. And the reason I'm sharing this story with you guys is because it's a highly compelling story. It wasn't even really my own. It was about someone I loved. But it's still, because I felt so passionately about it, translated. You know, it wasn't like I was just like, oh, you know, I know this guy that had a stroke and how sad. It was more, here's something that's happening. Here's what I think it means to all of us, and won't you join me in this challenge, right? So just to give you a happy update, so he's 98%, this has been several years ago, 98% completely, if you want to call it, healed. You know, he can walk and he talk, and he has the same sense of humor and all these things. What's funny is the major thing that he didn't regain is his sense of time. So if you say, you can't ever say to Sean, could you pick the kids up at 5? Because he may or may not show up, which I find highly convenient. I would love to just sometimes lose my sense of time. But, again, it's a story of inspiration. So you may have a story about someone you know. You may have a story about a client. There are plenty of times I have just shared stories about people I see in the media if it moves me. You know, if it's something that really resonates with my values, with what I am trying to help my clients with. So that is another category that you can brainstorm that could be a story that from your childhood, from your neighbor, it doesn't matter, but it's a great category of story. I'll pause here in just a second for questions. I want to cover one more category, which is called teaching stories. And this is pretty straightforward. These are how-to stories. These are stories that teach someone something. So you might even call it a story of demonstration. These are stories that take a reader or a listener or a viewer step by step through how to do something. You could look at any of Martha's O Magazine articles, and no matter what kind of story she's telling, she turns them into stories of demonstration or how-to teaching stories, because her formula really, now every time you read an O Magazine article, you'll be like, there it is, there's the formula. But the formula that Martha uses, I'm using the word formula loosely, but the way that she organizes her writing is probably a better way to say it, is that the first half of the article, she sets the stage and she starts telling a story about what the problem is or what the hell is. And then the whole second half of the article is, so the first half might be hell and the second half is and back, meaning that whole second half of the O Magazine article is her teaching the reader how to pull themselves out of that kind of situation or problem. And so we call those teachable stories or stories of demonstration. They can also be, you know, as simple as here is how to make a green smoothie or here is how to change your mindset. They're very specific in that they're teaching in a much more direct way than something like a story of inspiration. So I'm going to pause here really quickly before I start talking about the values and action stories. Just to see what questions are coming up as I discuss. So far we've covered the really hell and back, stories of inspiration, and how-tos. Are you guys coming up in your note-taking with some of your own stories?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have a list started, which is
okay,
which
good.
Is helpful. Yeah.
Good. All right. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about this values in action. So we had you guys take that assessment, and I was asking some of the coaches that were on the line before I started the recording how you liked that assessment. It seems like you guys liked that one, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very informative.
Cool. Okay. So what's interesting about that is you can take a look at what the top character strengths were that the survey gave you, and then you can take a look at stories that you've come up with that you think you might want to blog about, or they might be something that you'll highlight, some kind of story that you might highlight, and see if you can see the link between the two. Because usually whatever your values are, they show up in the stories that you find compelling to share. And an example of this, I like to use my daughter Emily's story with her friend as an example of this, because I think it just illustrates it well. So I had my kids take the values in action, the VIA survey, and Emily's top strength was, I think the category is justice, equality, or justice, fairness and justice. And my gosh, when she took that survey and I saw those results, I was like, oh my God, I thought you were just like a pain in the ass. I'm kidding. But it helped me so much as a parent to see that that is such a strong force in her life, such a strong theme. And she's in high school now, but we used to call her the middle school vigilante because if there was any kind of social justice issue going down, you could bet that Emily Hyatt was on the scene. Like, she was going to make sure that people were treated justly and fairly. And she has a friend who, in the seventh grade, is a girl who identifies as a boy, so transgender. She has a friend who was known as Gretchen, who in this very small conservative Midwestern town in the seventh grade in middle school bravely came out as Gabe. And not only did the students have a difficult time with it, but the faculty, the school counselor, the administration did not handle this well, is putting it very politely. And so Emily actually, it's actually an inspiring story to me too, is this, you know, what was she, 13, 12, 13-year-old little girl, took it upon herself to set appointments with the principal, the vice principal, the school counselor, and basically mediated, first of all, educated these adults on transgender and really brought the school together, you know, was able to present information as a child to adults about what they didn't understand. And she passed out buttons at school that said, don't judge what you don't understand. And, I mean, it just is an amazing story of that blends together her top VIA survey results with who she is as a person. And so you may look at the stories that you have written down and look at your values and see if that makes sense. But so if Emily had her own website, which I fully expect her, I'm surprised she doesn't have one already, although she has more followers than I do on Instagram, she would use that story to illustrate her values in action about what she believes in, which is social justice. She lives and dies for it. which is great. But your values in action might be really different. And so one of the ways that we help coaches really own what those are is something that we call your I believe statements. And so this is a completely invitational exercise that I would love to have you guys do as part of your homework for this class, because it not only is fun, I've never had anyone say, like, oh, that exercise totally blows, who's the highest. Most people really like it. For one thing, it will bring you some clarity. Number two, it will give you a form of a personal story that you can start using today, tonight, tomorrow. But basically what you do is you set a timer. You could use your phone timer. You could use a kitchen timer. I don't care what kind of timer you use. But you set it for 5 minutes and only 5 minutes. And you get out a journal or some paper and a pen or pencil, and you start journaling on the prompt, I believe. And that's all. I believe, dot, dot, dot. And then the timer starts and you go. What do you believe? And so you might start with gibberish, like, I believe I should empty the dishwasher. I believe this is a waste of time. Whatever. But you, the trick is to not let yourself stop, to not let your pen lift from the paper until the 5 minutes is up. And then you let it sit for 24 hours and come back to it. And when you come back to it, you can use a highlighter or another pen color and circle or highlight what stands out to you as interesting. So what you'll notice is, yes, there'll be nonsense in there, but amidst the nonsense, there will be some golden nuggets, if you will. And the first time that I did this exercise, what came out for me was something that I now call the Lucky Seven. So it had to have been 2010, the first time I did this. And I came up with this manifesto called the Lucky Seven that emerged from this I Believe exercise. And it said things like, life does not have to be hard, and your freak flag is everyone's favorite part of you. You can have whatever you want. These are pretty simple belief statements. However, put together as a manifesto and just hosting that on my website or posting it, people got a real sense of what I was about. And then this simple manifesto became the outline for my book, Create Your Own Luck. And then even like 2 years ago, I was still using this for material. The line, your freak flag is everyone's favorite part of you, became a workshop. And so in terms of the I believe statements and what you can do with it, at the minimum, it will be interesting for you to see your own philosophy bubble up as a result of this. And it could be just for you. You don't have to share it anywhere with anyone. I think you might want to. But then at the maximum, it could become the foundation of a major project, like a book or a video series or an ebook. So the I believe statement, I think, is a great way to start wetting your whistle, if you will, and seeing if your values in action really bubble up, which I think they will. And it gives you some really practical ways, which I'll talk about next, of no matter what category of story, it's not all that important to categorize them, and they somewhat overlap anyway. But having the categories sometimes helps us more easily make lists of stories. Like, oh, yeah, I have a how-to story about how to do this. Or, oh, yeah, this story really inspired me growing up. Or with Helen Back, that's probably the easiest one, coming up with stories of Phoenix Rising, if you will. So I'm going to pause for a second before I start talking about what all you could do with these lovely stories and just see what questions are coming up for you guys as you listen to this. Nobody.
Hi, Susan. This is Nikki Slattery. I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
It's interesting with this stories because as I think more about niching and find my niche to be kind of the wealth and business building niche, I do wonder, like, I have some really personal stories that are triumphs, but they're not necessarily anything connected to my niche. And I know, you know, you have a niche as well. Like, how do you find yourself blending those stories or using them in blogs or things that you're using to connect with people when they're not necessarily connected to your niche at all?
Oh, my gosh, I'm in love with this question. Great question. So the simple answer is you can use these stories. If they don't directly relate to your niche, that's okay. You can still use them mm-hmm. on the About Me page of your website. That's probably the easiest way for you guys to use any of these stories is the About Me page on any website is always the second highest visited web page on the website. Usually homepage number one, About Me. Sometimes the About Me page is number one. So you just want to make sure that you don't blow that page off and put nonsense on there, that you put some really juicy, meaty stuff on there. And so any of these stories, obviously that would be a great place. But it doesn't, in my opinion, if your niche is money and building wealth and let's mm-hmm. say your biggest triumph, what is your biggest, one of your favorite stories that you think might not be related?
That's a good question. Like, actually, I have had two parents who have had cancer and who have lived mm-hmm. through it, and just helping them through that process and, you know, handling it in my own way doesn't really have a lot to do with, you know, building a successful business and money. But it is a very personal story that I have shared with people as I coach them, but have never talked about, you know, in a blog or any sort of material that would be more of like a marketing nature.
You know what, though? I bet you could find ways of how it does relate, because when you talk about building a successful business and building wealth, there are certain activities or certain qualities or a kind of a mindset to have to do those things. And I would bet mm-hmm. there's a correlation between your ability to do that with your business and your money and also your ability mm-hmm. to develop a mindset to kind of roll with what's happened health-wise with your
mm-hmm.
parents.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah. No,
you know, so you could make that translation there. Like, I tell mm-hmm. a ton of parenting stories. And my niche has nothing to do with parenting, right? I'm not a parent coach.
Sure.
And yet the lessons and the stuff, I mean, people love hearing about my real life parenting mm-hmm. stories. And it really doesn't have anything to do with losing weight without dieting, which is one niche, or mm-hmm. helping entrepreneurs make more money, which is the other niche. It does. It has everything to do with it and nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's about the transferability of the lesson, mm-hmm. too. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Great question. Plus, just in general, people want to know about you.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know. They want to know about you. So, I think it's important that even if you don't think it directly translates and you can't find the common thread, that you still tell them things about you, even if it's like, I won a pancake flipping contest. I mean, stuff like that, mm-hmm. people, they want to know. They want to know mm. about you personally.
Sure.
What about any of the rest of you guys? Any questions bubbling up about this stuff before I talk about how to apply it?
Susan,
I have a question.
Hang on just a second. There was somebody before you, Barbara.
I was raised. I've already asked a question, so I could go second.
Oh, that's okay. All right,
and this is
Barbara.
Bridget. I also have a question when they're done.
No, Bridget, I'm sorry. I was calling you Barbara, and it's Bridget. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I just, you know, when you're talking, the thoughts that come up with, you know, I do have quite a few personal stories that I think people may or may not relate to, but that have been held back. Unfortunately, in the last 10 years, I've had quite a few. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing the webpage and you're talking about yourself, I mean, I want to tell my story. It's a lot, but I don't want to be a Debbie Downer either. So, you know, the balance between talking about my story and how long it needs to be, how much to share. Do you just kind of space it out? Because I have a lot.
This is a great thing to have. Now, a lot of the people that when I first start working with them, it's the opposite. Like they're trying to come up with things that they think are compelling enough to share. But you have a wonderful mm-hmm. issue and that you have a ton of stuff to share. And so what I would do, I mean, in any kind of self-help writing, the way to not be a Debbie Downer is to write about it from the empowered place where you sit now. So you're telling the story as a survivor and a thriver on the other side of it. That sounds very different than, well, and then this happened to me, and then my dog died, and then my, right? Like you're wanting to tell the story from a place of empowerment. I will also say that there are, this actually dovetails beautifully into how to use all of this material, and depending on, like, if you make a list of all the stories that, potential stories that you have to tell, you'll start to notice that there are natural places where these stories will want to live. There will be some stories that fit beautifully into a blog post, you know, down the road, a blog post that you might want to write. There are other stories that you think, no, this is a keynote, this is an amazing story about me, and I want that to be front and center on my About Me page, and it will also be something that I talk about from the stage. There will be other smaller stories that maybe you think, this is going to be my I Love My Body manifesto, you know, my story of learning how to love my body as it is, and it becomes a book. Obviously, there are so many different ways to use these stories that there's no need to cram it all in on a website. You can pace it and spread it out to where you think, okay, this should go on the homepage. This should go on the About Me page. This is going to be a blog post at some point. This is going to be the foundation or the skeleton of a book. Maybe one day I'll write an ebook about this one. And you can start to see that some of them are asking to be told in a bigger way than others. Does that make sense, Bridget?
It does. It does. It's I'm thinking, and yes, completely. Thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Really good question. And then there was somebody else that was asking.
Yeah, that was me. It was Ray.
Hey, Ray, what you got?
Just wondering, so my mind is going to Byron Katie's tagline, which is, you know, the who would you be without your story? And, you know, she's such a proponent of dropping your story, yet I had a hard time making sense of that because I love hearing people's stories and it's how we know each other. So I'm just wondering how, like, where does that idea of the healing process also fit in with owning your story in an empowering way? Like, when do you drop a story and when do you totally own it and claim it?
Ooh, I love this question. You guys are so smart. So dropping your story is when it doesn't serve you. So who would you be without your story? That question comes in if your ego is so attached to a story that it's really harming your ability to live your right life or be happy or whatever. So an example of that for me would have been, when my kids were really little, when say they were like 5 and 6 or 3 and 4, I was a total martyr mom, meaning I did everything. I do everything around here. You people wouldn't know what hit you if I all of a sudden was not here. okay? So I was that woman. Like, I did everything. I managed everything. My family was, like, so lucky to have me because I did everything, right? And so the downside of that story is that I have to do it all. I'm so exhausted. I have to do everything. No one helps, blah, blah, blah. So boring, right?
Right.
So Byron Katie asking me, who would you be without that story, is so helpful. But if I am a completely empowered lady boss who's like, you know, oh, my gosh, I love my family. I love my work. I have gone from being martyr mom to being a partner in this house. Like, I don't need to drop that story, right? Because it's, like, it's completely empowering and grounded, and our lives are so much better because I'm no longer martyr mom. So who would you be without the story is, like, how could you be free if you'd let go of this bullshit?
Okay.
She's
asking. Got it.
That makes sense.
It
and
totally
yes,
does. Yeah.
People's stories are so, I mean, this is what connects us, right? What you said about people's stories being of such interest. I love people's stories. I am just riveted by everybody's stories. If I wasn't so tired, typically when I'm on an airplane, I would want to talk to the person next to me and find out the story, but usually I want to put my headphones on, not talk.
Right.
But I love, that's why I love Humans of New York and things like it. So does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. Big difference. Yeah.
Yay. All right. So I want to cover, I've already pretty much touched on all of them, but I just want to make sure I mention, you know, once you get these stories written down, you can start to look at, again, where you want them to live. Do they need to be on your website? Do they need to be just one blog post or a series of blogs? They could even be a video, you know, you could have a whole video series or short video blog, ebook, your stories. I think your stories should be in a presentation if you're giving presentations. So anytime when I teach coaches how to speak in public, the formula, or it's not so much a formula, but the thing that I follow is personal story combined with teaching a coaching tool combined with a challenge for the audience. And depending on how much time you have, it's rinse and repeat. So story, coaching tool, challenge. And start to notice the public speakers that you really like, and I think you'll probably notice that it's because they share powerful stories in them and they're not just talking at you and saying, like, feel better, stop doing that, love your body. Okay, those are great things to say, but how? And the way that you teach someone is through story. And then a really, really practical way is in your elevator speech, when we talked about your X plus Y equals Z, I typically combine that with a personal story, like a client success story or my own personal story, because I think that a powerful way to understand or to help others understand what you do is just to tell them a story instead of just saying, I help people lose weight. I talk about something specific, a particular story around that. I do have time for some more questions, but I want to kind of walk you through what I would invite you to do as homework, which is brainstorm stories. And then brainstorm ways in which you might use those stories based on what we've discussed. I would also invite you to do the I believe statement and post those in the thread I already started for this class, because I think it is super, super powerful for people to see that, to classmates, to see one another's. You may be like, oh, it's not interesting, but it is interesting. We want to see it. We want to see it. And then the last thing that I'll share with you guys is, because I'm blogging several times a week and I'm always interested in capturing content, I carry an idea notebook, a very small idea notebook in my purse, and it's with me almost all the time. If I'm out running and I come up with an idea for a story that I want to share, I use voice to text myself the idea, because I have so many when I run, especially if I'm running by myself. I don't want to lose it. And so I want to encourage you guys to start turning your eyes and your ears onto all – you probably have already had it happen to yourself where you've been in an airport or you've been with someone and thought, oh, my gosh, that would be a great blog topic. And then later you're like, what was that again? What was that great idea I had? I don't remember. That happened to me one time too many, and I started becoming really dedicated to having ways to capture my ideas. And then what I do is every Monday is my content creation day. And what that means in my life is Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays are typically my live coaching and teaching days. My business hours on those days are full of live coaching and teaching. Monday, it's very unusual for me to be on the phone, and I only do it on Mondays for Miss Martha Beck. But I spend my Mondays writing my blogs, recording podcasts, writing my book, and creating class curriculums. And so I get out my notebook, and I go through my texts, and I start sifting through the ideas I've had over the past week. And some weeks I have tons and other weeks I have less, but I do, that is sort of my process that has kept my content fresh. And again, I want to help you unearth stories that, you know, your Phoenix Rising stories, but then there are also amazing stories that probably happen in your life every single day that you could be sharing, concepts that you could be bringing life to, if you just get into that practice of it. So obviously, you know, a short little ditty about Beyonce might make it to my blog or podcast, but it wouldn't necessarily be, you know, a giant book idea. And my philosophy or I believe statement on body love, which has become a program I call BARE, B-A-R-E, that has become a book, right? So it's important to be thinking at it in both ways, big and small, and not put pressure on yourself to think, oh, this idea for a story needs to be book worthy. No. Just start writing and start sharing, and then let the power of story grow. And then you'll know. When you have an idea for a book, you'll know. But I digress. I will pause here and see what questions you guys have coming up. Nada? So who is up for the I Believe Statement Challenge?
Amy is. I'm going to do it hopefully tonight.
Yay.
I'm going to do it.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
I want to see them, so I would love to read them. So please post them in the forum, and then I would love to hear how you think you want to use it. And you guys, I've had coaches do these I Believe statements, and then one thing will jump out at them that then becomes like their whole platform. So I know it seems like a little silly 5-minute activity, but honestly, it's the exercise that I do when I'm creating lots of things. You know, I'll think a little bit about something might happen in the media, for example, and I'll be like, well, what do I think about that? And I'll be like, okay, here's what I believe. And I've just kind of trained myself to be willing to say what my thoughts and my philosophy is on things, and then see if it becomes something. And it usually does. So I know that when you're in training, and I certainly was this way, I relied heavily on Martha's philosophy on things. And I still do. I love her thoughts and her philosophies on things. But you want to start getting into the habit of utilizing your own philosophy. And so I think this I believe statement is a good way to train yourself to do that, because there may be parts even of the training that your philosophy might differ, and that's cool, and that's okay, and you should embrace that. All right. Well, I am going to let you guys go. We're just a little bit past our time, and the PM crowd is always a little more sleepy than the AM crowd, so I'm going to honor that and let you guys go and get cracking on your I believe statements if you want. But if you need some help, feel free to ask questions in the group, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Susan.
Bye.
Bye.